You're listening to Coach Life.
Wow, so we're back finally. Apologies, I know it's been so long since we last had an episode on the podcast. Personal reasons, obviously the pandemic. It's been difficult, but we're back now, trying to really push this. So what better way to start off than an amazing interview with an assistant of Graham Potter. Graham Potter's so hot at the moment, his Brighton side having beaten Liverpool and Spurs. So I thought, let's go for it. Let's get an insight into who this man really is. And wow, I mean, I'm just blown away by it. Absolutely blown away by it. Brian was amazing. His insight. I had a load of questions written down. But, you know, I didn't need them. It just flowed so well. So I hope you enjoy this. I've got to say, the rain is horrendous here. So there's a bit of rain that you can hear on my windows that I didn't quite realise until listening back to it. And also there's a slight lag here and there where me and Brian overlap only in two or three places. So please don't be put off by that, because you will miss out on some amazing content. Such a good listen. Also, just wanted to address the slight change that we had. Coach life, obviously, in all different sports, you know, coaches are needed. I'm from a football background. I did play a few other sports, but football is my thing. So I wanted to, with the year I've had, being quite difficult to record, I wanted to slim it down to what I know best, really. Unfortunately, you know, it means some of these other sports, the coaches will miss out on some content from their chosen field. But I hope that the content we get across can influence you in other ways as well, you know, because coaching is a universal sort of thing, and it can float across all sports, really. So we hope you stay with us. If not, then we truly understand. Thank you.
Well, I've relocated to Denmark now, mate. I've had an interesting couple of years. I was together with a Danish girl for about 10 years.
Right.
Anyway, we had a kid about 2.5 years ago. And my son got seriously ill when he was about one. He got cancer.
Oh, Christ.
So we were living in Sweden at the time. And then we got him transferred down to Denmark, where my missus was from. Anyway, he's well now. He's cured now. But me and my missus have separated since.
Right.
So I've relocated to Denmark to be closer to him now. So
yeah.
The weather in Denmark is similar to England. It's cold, been a little bit of snow, but I'm not in Sweden now, so I've come to start again in Denmark, you know, since what's gone on with my son. So
yeah, well, I hope he's over it, and you can get on with your life, you know.
Oh, he's great now, mate. It was horrific to go through it. He had a disease called hepatome blastoma. It's cancer of the liver. And when he was one, we noticed he wasn't well, took him to the hospital, and they told us that he had this big tumor. Anyway, we got him transferred down to Denmark, near where his mum's from. They give him all the chemotherapy and everything like that. Then he went to Copenhagen for a big operation where they've removed about 75% of his liver.
Crikey.
But he's absolutely fine now, and they've said he'll live a normal life, and it's been an emotional roller coaster. But when you see him now, it's unbelievable. You'd never think he'd ever been ill, you know. So,
and does he have to go for regular checks, you know, sort of like 6 months or whatever?
Yeah, what they do, what I think, like, yeah, the first every couple of months afterwards, they'd give him like a MRI scan just to check everything was normal. And because he's got through that stage now, he goes back and they just do like an ultrasound scan. And then they do that for so many years. But the hospital have basically said to us, we're confident he'll be all right now. We'll do all the checks. And if you don't hear from us, everything's fine. Or if we contact you, then you'll need to bring him back in. And we've heard nothing since. He looks amazing now. It's and they actually done a big investigation into me and his mum, like our family trees. What did your relatives die of?
Right.
Grandparents and this. And it was like a big research thing where they wanted to find out if it was genetic or hereditary or if it was just like a freak of nature. And
yeah,
they took blood tests off me and his mum, and then at the end of it, they basically said to us, it's just unexplainable. It's nothing in your genetics are out like that. It's just one of them things we can't explain. So
yeah,
they said that's positive because it shouldn't come back, you know. So
exactly. If it's not hereditary or in the family, it's fingers crossed, isn't it? But you know, I mean, my dad's had cancer of the esophagus, and you know, once he's been operated on and whatnot, you know, it's just a constant check. And it's sort of, I know it doesn't sound right, but it's sort of better that way because you're constantly conscious of it and getting the checks, and you know, just you're on edge for anything that you're unaware of, aren't you?
Yeah, you probably feel a bit more protected in a way, because I know,
yeah,
I've read up quite a bit on cancer, and I know with that one, esophagus, it's a bit of a silent one. There's not really many symptoms with that one.
No.
I know that's like a dangerous one because the symptoms go a bit unnoticed till it's too late. So it's like the fact he's getting checked all the time, you're probably a bit more protected than people that aren't getting checked in a way, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's funny enough. Yeah, it was stroke of luck, really, that I think they found it. Right. I think this was a fair while ago. I mean, Christ, this must be, well, I think it was 15 years ago, you know, when they only gave him 10 years to live.
Right.
And he's still, you know, even though they got the cancer out, and he's had a few problems since, yet they have to basically scrape it and whatnot. So it's not the best, but yeah, he's still here.
Really good for you, mate.
Yeah. It's fingers crossed. But so no, you must have blimey. So a Middlesbrough lad,
yeah,
who's been in Sweden, who's now in Denmark. Do you know? Have you picked up the Danish language quite well?
Well, I was together with my ex for around 10 years, and obviously I heard her speaking a lot of Danish, and she'd watch Danish TV and things like that. And I went to school when I was in Sweden. I learned Swedish. I speak Swedish to a decent level now, actually. And
yeah,
it's interesting with the two languages. If it's down on paper written, you can make sense of it. With your Danish, with your Swedish knowledge, you can make sense of the Danish. But the big difference is the way it's pronounced. So
right,
the pronounced words a lot different, and letters of the alphabet a lot different. So, like, if it's spoken, it's probably a bit more difficult to understand. But if it's written down, you can make a lot of sense of it. But due to my experience with my ex-girlfriend and now I've been in Denmark a period of time as well, I can make sense of it, but I've still got a bit to go, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. I'd love to. Some of my family are in Norway, so I'd like to learn that lingo, really.
Yeah.
It's just getting the time, isn't it, really? Yeah. I mean, I suppose you were sort of forced into that situation, weren't you? You know, you had to learn it to survive, basically.
Well, I wasn't. What it was, when I signed for Östersund, is this the podcast now, or is it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's okay. It's all right. I can just edit it. It's fine.
Okay.
Yeah. Just talk. Let's go for
okay,
it.
Okay, mate. So, I didn't know if this was like an intro, but yeah, what happened when I signed for Östersund?
Yeah.
At that point, when Graham first came, we were in like the fourth tier, And we had 7 or 8 English players, foreign players. And then we had like a group of Swedes who played there. And a lot of the Swedes had jobs. And then we'd train at 5 o'clock on a night. So anyway, I was thinking to myself, I need to fill my days with something, be proactive and try and use my time, what I've got. So I signed up for a course. It's called SFE in Sweden. It, Svenska för invandrare, translates to like Swedish for immigrants. Anyway, it was every morning, 8:30 till 12 o'clock, Monday to Friday. So I thought, I'll give it a try. When I was at school, senior school and stuff, languages weren't really a strength, if I'm honest. And then I thought, I'll give it a try. So when I went to the school in Sweden, it was like, it was literally people from all over the world what had moved to Sweden. We had people from China, Russia, Afghanistan, Spain, literally everywhere you can think of. And you start off in the basic course, they're learning you the days of the week, numbers, the clock, things like that. And then as you gradually progress, you go on to the next stage and the next stage. And then I passed the final exam for that. And then I got offered to do like the next course where it's like Swedish as a second language, Svenska som andra språk. So I started that course. And it was an amazing experience, really, because I met people from all over the world. We'd every maybe once a month we'd get together, drink coffee, and we'd speak the language and things like that. I made some really good friends. And it was a case of, I think the big thing with language, a big hurdle is like, you're a bit nervous to speak it, you know, but in there, everybody was in the same boat. You're all in the same environment. You're all can make your mistakes on each other type thing. And then the teacher will come in and say, oh, well, you said this wrong. But there's no like embarrassing factor with it because you're all in the same boat. It's not like you're going out trying to speak to a Swedish person and talking like maybe you're a 10-year-old. Do you understand what I mean? So it was the perfect environment to learn. And then eventually, as you get more confident, then I started speaking to players in the football club in Swedish and things like that. And it just goes from strength to strength, really. So it was something I never expected to do. I mean, my move to Östersund came as a shock. I was playing for Gateshead in the conference at the time. And I literally just got a phone call out of the blue off Graham to say, would it interest you to come to Sweden to play? And I was like, I didn't expect this. And then I spoke it over with my family and stuff. And I thought, I'll give it a go. I think I was about 28 at the time. I'd played in League Two and the Scottish Championship and Conference. And I come to realise I'm like, this is maybe my level, you know, I've experienced what I'm going to do in Britain. Yeah. And this is a chance to go and experience a new culture, new people. And I probably never get the chance again. So I thought I'll go and give it a go. And I went across, you know.
Yeah, no, it's a lovely place to go, isn't it? Sweden. It's very, very, very nice, really. And I was just going to go back to, did you cross paths with Graham beforehand? So had you, because obviously he played as well, had you sort of crossed paths, or he just saw you playing and thought, I'm going to contact this guy, I'd like him with us?
The only time I ever crossed paths, there's a bit of a funny story actually, because the only time I ever crossed paths with Graham was when I played for Carlisle. I was 19 and I signed for Carlisle from non-league football. And I think Graham was coming to the end of his career then. And when I played for Carlisle, we played Boston. And I think Graham was, I don't think Graham was involved in the game. He was maybe left out or injured, but I think he was at the hat-trick in the game for Carlisle. We won 4-1.
Wow.
And it was a great moment in my career because it was like the first half hat-trick. So, and it was like a perfect hat-trick, left foot, right foot and a header. So I don't know if Graham remembered me from then, but I think the way my move to Östersund came about was when I played in Scotland for Hamilton, I had Billy Reid as a manager and Graham Jones as an assistant. And I know Graham Potter's really good friends with Graham Jones, and I don't know whether he's rang Graham Jones up and said, I'm looking for a centre-forward type thing. And I think Graham Jones has said, maybe you should go and sign Wakey, you know, Brian Wakey, he'll do a decent job for you, good lad, etc.
Yeah.
And then I just got a phone call out the blue, so I'd never actually come across Graham in person or spoke to him, but he just phoned me out of the blue. He'd obviously done his research and spoke to people he knows, and he invited me to go across. I ended up signing a 2-year contract, and to be honest, when I signed the contract, I thought that would just be, it's a couple of years football and then I'll probably come back home. I didn't expect it to go on to what it did, you know, like I ended up being out there going on for 10 years after it. So it just shows how you can like fall into things afterwards. But initially I went down a 2-year contract just to play.
Yeah. Well, it's just sort of happened naturally, isn't it? Which is pretty much the best way, I think.
It really was, yeah. And I mean, you could see straight away how talented Graham was. You know, like I played in England and Scotland for the majority of my career, and it was much of a muchness, really. And then I signed for Hamilton. I can't remember. I'm not good with the years, but I signed for Hamilton, and we had Billy Reid as manager. And at that point in my career, he was like the best sort of man manager tactician that I'd seen, really. And it gave a whole new insight into how football can be done. And then later on in my career, when I went to Scandinavia, that got multiplied again, you know, different training methods, different culture, no ranting and raving in dressing rooms, all proactive, like helping people in every way. And obviously then I started to understand how Graham was, but it sort of changed my perspective on football, you know, because I'd only seen one way in Britain in a way till I come across Billy. And then shortly afterwards, I go to Sweden with Graham. And then you start understanding football can be done differently and in a different sort of environment can be created, if you know what I mean.
So what were the differences in the players in Sweden then? Do you think they were they had a different mindset?
I just think culturally it's a big difference with Sweden and Britain. I think Britain's a lot more direct. And I just think it's more of a laid back approach in Sweden, and I think there's a way to speak to people. If you just scream and shout at people, you probably lose them in Sweden, where you need to act slightly different and manage them differently. And I think Graham recognised this very early in his I mean, Graham had played a lot of football, high levels in England, Premier League and different clubs.
Yeah.
But I just think one of Graham's biggest skills is adapting to the environment, how to maximise this environment I'm in now. And he learned so quickly. So I remember when we first started in like the fourth tier, a lot of the players we had, some were working and then train on the night. Then he had like sort of full-time professionals there like myself who were full-time at the club. And he just knew how to speak to everybody, how to create a good learning environment where he improved players. And everybody respected him. And he wasn't one to scream and shout. It's more proactive. He's just trying to develop players all the time, develop the environment. But then, having said that, if the time come where he needed to put his foot down and let people know they need to do a bit more, then he would do that. But it maybe happened 2-3 times a season. It wasn't like he was screaming and shouting every week, you know. So I just think he's really intelligent, quickly adapt his environment and how to get the most out of everybody, really.
And just like you said, when you got there, they were in tier four, yeah. weren't they? And then I think you worked your way all the way up basically to the first division. And I think when Graham left to go to Swansea, I think he left them in 2018 and they were sixth in the table,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, which is a massive achievement. So when you were going through those leagues, I mean, was there a massive sort of change in players? You know, some players were out and you needed better players or players who were full-time, not part-time.
Yeah, well, what happened was the club went through a transition. So when we got out of the fourth tier, then it goes into the third tier. And basically what it's like is in England, you've got the Conference North and South, and then you go into the Conference National. So in Sweden, the yep. third tier, Division One in Sweden, it's like North and South. And then when you go into the second, and then it's like the Conference National in a way. It's like the national, it's a national league. It's the second tier in Sweden. Do you understand what I mean? So the third level separated into two halves. And then when you go into the second highest league, it's a national league. And then obviously you got the top league, the Allsvenskan. And I think that's one of the most impressive things with Graham. It's just how quickly he can recognise where he needs to improve, who he needs to maybe let go, and positions he needs to strengthen. And the club when it went from the fourth tier to the third, then it started becoming more full time then. And then it'd be training every morning like a professional club. And I played the first season in that we were in, like the third level. And it was just a constant improving the team all the time. And, you know, some transfer windows, it might have been six or seven players in, six or seven players out. So there were really, how can you say it best? They knew exactly what was needed to take it to the next level, you know. And some players fall by the wayside and new players come in, but that's the nature of the beast. If you want to be successful, I suppose that's how you needed to do it. And because where Östersund was coming from and the level it was in, it needed wholesale changes to make it strong enough to go through the levels. So when I look back now from a coaching perspective, I can fully understand why it was happening. You know, like they had a real understanding of what was needed to take it forward.
And when in those years, what were the tactics like? I mean, were you 4-4-3-3 or maybe 4-4-2 back then, or three at the back? You know, 3-5-2, which he uses quite a bit now at Brighton.
Yeah, well, it's interesting actually because when Graham first started the first season when we're in the fourth tier, Graham would he played a back four. It was like a 4-3-3 or 4-2-3-1 then when I was playing. But then the second season, he started introducing the back five. And he got a lot of criticism, actually, in Sweden, because in Sweden, a lot of teams back then were predominantly 4-4-2. Bit old-school football, but it can be effective as well. And he had a complete different outlook on football. He wanted to dominate possession. He wanted to dominate games. And then he introduced like a back five. So it was 3-4-3 or 3-5-2, different variations. He'd always have subtle differences for different oppositions. And I remember locally in the press, you can't play a back five. You can't do this. You can't do that. And it's crazy when you look back now and you think Graham was just ahead of his time. You know, you get the skeptics questioning things, but he introduced a back five then, and he basically mastered it. So every training session was designed to how the team could improve, how to dominate the ball, how to create overloads in different sides of the pitch. And it just went from strength to strength. And then 2 years after, when he made the progress that he had, everyone's raving about him. But it just shows you in football, even he got a little bit of criticism for trying to change things.
And how did he deal with that criticism? Did he sort of, I mean, you were a player at a point, so he might not have shown you, but when you were a manager, did he, assistant, did he struggle with that criticism? Did he ever doubt what you were trying to do, or was he just so focused and no, I know what I'm doing and I'll be proven right?
I think he just, how can you say it? I wouldn't say that like criticism never ever bothered him. I think it used to frustrate him because he had a bigger knowledge in a way, and it's a case of like he knows he's right in what he's doing, and I don't think he ever lost any sleep over anything like that. But it was just, I think Graham understood the culture, and that, I mean, even now Sweden still play a 4-4-2 and a fair amount of teams still play 4-4-2 in Sweden. It's like their game model, their what they been brought up on, really. But when you look,
it's their comfort, isn't it?
But when you look at a lot of leagues across Europe and things like that, you don't find as many teams doing it. And it when I look back, it's literally like Graham's been ahead of his time, really, and he's sort of revolutionised Swedish football. Because when I've been working there the last couple of years in different capacities, there's not as many teams playing a 4-4-2 now. And I think Graham's the biggest influence behind that, to be honest. It was sort of he educated the nation how you could do something different and how it can be so successful.
Did you bring through... let's go to when you were an assistant now. Actually, I'm going to change the question. When you were playing for Östersund, did you sort of have ideas of becoming an assistant or a coach, or not at all?
No, not really. I played. I signed for Graham, and then obviously I played a season. I had a really successful season. I scored quite a few goals, and then the second season, when the team went into the third level, we were a bit up and down at the start of the season. And a team from a higher league came in for me. So Umeå, who were in the league above what Östersund were in, came in for me. Graham spoke to me and he said, listen, what do you think? He said, Umeå's coming for you. They had an English manager at the time, Stuart Gibson as well. And he said, would you like to go and give it a go? Like, obviously, you're getting a bit older now. Would you like to go and give it a try? So I thought about it, and then I thought, okay, I'll give it a go. So I decided to leave. Me and Graham decided that I'd leave. And I think he was looking to bring different styles of players into me as well, so it suited all parties. And I went across there. But before I left, Graham said to me, Wakey, make sure you keep in touch with me, because I'd like to work with you as an assistant in the future. So I went across to Umeå and I had a look at the club and I signed, and they offered me a 6-month contract or an 18-month contract. Now, the club was in a bit of a relegation battle at the time, so I thought, I'll just sign for 6 months and keep my options open. So anyway, the end of that season, Umeå were relegated, and then Graham contacted me in that summer and he said, what are you planning on doing? And I said, well, I don't really know at the minute. I'm just putting my feelers out. And he said, I'd like you to come back and be an assistant here. And it was a tough decision because I could have still played on for a few more years. I was fit enough and things like that. It wouldn't have been at the best levels, but I could have got a few more years out of it. But then I just thought to myself, you'll never ever get a better chance to learn about being a coach, about being a manager, an assistant, whatever, with Graham. So I sacrificed a few years playing just to be able to be in his presence and learn about the dynamics of football, really. And it was a fantastic education. I seen him behind the scenes, how he worked, how he planned his sessions, just how he conducts himself on a daily basis. And I feel really fortunate, really, when I look back, because I don't think you could probably get a better introduction into the management or coaching side of football.
Yeah. No, I, in hindsight, if I had the opportunity to work with someone like that, that as forward thinking as that, I'd probably have done the same.
That's what I mean. It was just like people in and around him were so aware of how good he is, but the outside world, he was still a bit of an unknown quantity. But when you've seen how he operated and how he worked in there, you quickly started to understand how good he was, you know. And when he gave me the chance to just, I mean, initially when I worked in there with him as an assistant, he had a staff in there. So he had, it was Graham, obviously his manager, Bjorn Amberg, who's in Brighton with him now, was his assistant manager. And then he asked me to come in as sort of a first team coach capacity, where I was like a link between the players and the staff. So I'd played with a fair amount of the players and was good friends with them all. And I'd be like a bit of a link in between. And I'd be at all the sessions and help with bits and bobs. And then I'd travel to all the games, and I was writing his sessions down and keeping like a dossier myself for everything he'd done, because I realised how high standard it was. And then when Östersund progressed further, then Graham spoke to me about Billy Reid, and he said, you worked with Billy for 2 years, how is he? And I said, he's absolutely different class. And then Billy Reid's good friends with Graham Jones, and Graham Potter's good friends with Graham Jones, so there's like links there. And then Billy come out as Graham's assistant manager. So it sort of strengthened the leader team as well. I mean, Billy's managed hundreds of games in Scotland and things like that. And it was just somebody with more experience coming in to work alongside Graham than what me and Bjorn had done in coaching at that point, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, a bit of experience.
Like an older head alongside him, and who could maybe help him in ways, well, what me or Bjorn maybe couldn't at that point. And then the coaching staff kept getting restructured. So then Bjorn became the analyst. And then I became like the under 21 manager, and Billy was the assistant. And then they had Kyle McCauley, who worked as like the head of recruitment. And I mean, the players he found in this period of time was unbelievable as well. Kyle's such an impressive guy, you know. He literally knew every player in the country, found like rough diamonds, what Graham polished into superstars, really. So it was a real interesting education, and to see how it can function in a small club, what it can make really successful.
So when you went to coach the under-21s, did you still keep quite a link with the first team? Did you still coach with the first team?
Yeah, so what would happen is, the first team would train at 11 on the morning. So I'd be at the first team sessions, and then I'd speak to Graham and say, right, we play this game on Wednesday. Is there anyone out the first team you feel needs minutes? And some weeks he'd say no, he didn't want to risk players to get injured. Some weeks he'd say, yeah, we can give 4 or 5 a run out, and then I'd plan that with him. But I was always at the first team sessions, and then I'd always travel with the first team to games. But then it would just be this extra game where sometimes we'd take players out the under-19s with a mixture of first team players. We'd play the game, and then Graham would often just sit in the stand and watch it and cast his eye over the players playing.
Yeah. And did you play, so with the under-21s, did you try and get the same philosophy and tactics with them as the first team?
Yeah, obviously, like, it was quite flexible, because say if there was four or five first team players playing, you'd obviously play them in the positions you wanted. So then your structure would be dictated by playing them in the roles that you want in the first team. So it's quite flexible. And then other weeks, you would have maybe no first team players. So then it was a bit of a freedom. What have I got this week? How can I form this into a shape? And then there'd be a bit more freedom then. But obviously, if Graham sent instructions down, I want him in this role, I want him in that room, then you followed that. And then because the travel's so big in Sweden, I mean, sometimes we were travelling 7-8 hours to a game. So, travel's crazy in Sweden, like with how big it is. And sometimes it was flights to games or 10-hour bus trips. And then it would just be like every game was different depending on what you had, you know. But obviously, if Graham was using a number out the first team, then it would be like, can you try him in this role and try him in that role? I want to have a look at this, I want to have a look at that. And that's how it should be, you know. Everything in the football club's geared up to hit the first team. And how can you say? You want to improve players and develop players, but then the reserve team is designed to help players get fit and get accustomed to go and play in the first team as well.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's like Jody Morris when he was on TV a few years ago. He didn't say the name, but you knew who he was on about. He was on about Mourinho, and he said that we've had managers at the club before. Obviously, Jody was the under-18 manager, and there'd be a game going on right near the office, and the first team manager didn't want to know. And it sounds like you guys had a really good link between all of it, and a sort of collective.
Yeah, we did. And the one thing I would say about Graham is the work he has put in to get to where he is now is unbelievable. I mean, I remember when Graham first started out in the fourth level, what we played in Division 2, Graham would be, he'd be driving 7-8 hours to go and watch opposition, driving back, and constantly looking and doing this and doing that. And he never stopped. And I think what's interesting about Graham is when you see him, how calm he is on camera and things, and how emotionally intelligent he is. And but there's such a driven determination inside Graham to do well and succeed that not many people, it's difficult to see it on the surface with him. But when you work with him, you really understand what he's about and how hard he works. And I can remember back in the early days when he didn't have a lot of staff to give the work to, he would be doing a lot of it hands-on himself, driving all over Sweden to watch players, watch opposition. And so hard working, you know. And there's nobody deserves it more where he is now, to be honest, because he's fantastic in everything he does, but he puts the work in as well, so you can't fault him, really.
With coaching in Sweden or in Scandinavia in general, what coaching qualifications did you have to go straight in as a manager or assistant in the fourth tier, let's say? Do you still have to have a pro licence?
What, are you talking about me or in general?
Or what? Just in general, just getting a feel for, you know, what you have to go over there. Let's say I wanted to go over there and do what you guys have done, basically. I'm just wondering what sort of experience and qualifications you have to have.
Well, it's an interesting question, because I don't know what... I think Graham probably had his A licence when he came to Östersund in the fourth level, or even maybe his pro licence, I'm not sure. But if I was guessing, I'd say he had his A licence. He's probably done his pro licence since. But in the lower levels, like the fourth level, maybe you need a B licence, an A licence, but I know in the Allsvenskan, now the top highest league, you need a pro licence to be the manager. But what happened with me was,
yes,
when I played for Hamilton in Scotland, there's actually a bit of a funny story. They did a course, the Scottish FA, where if you'd been a professional for 5 years, you could do like the B license, and it was like a discounted price. So when I played for Hamilton, the captain was Alex Neil. He's the manager of Preston now. Me and Alex played in Hamilton. Yeah. Alex, captain, great player, great guy. And he sent me one day, Wakey, do you fancy giving the B license a go? And I was like, well, yeah, we can do, yeah. And he said, I've found this course here. It's like, if you've been a pro, so-and-so, it's quite cheap. So I said, okay, we'll do it. So anyway, me and Alex were travelling back and forth to Stirling University, and I'd drive 1 week, he'd drive the next. And doing all the stuff, all the sessions and that. And then it came to the final day, like the assessment day. So we set off from Hamilton and we're on the motorway. And then all of a sudden there's a traffic jam of like crazy traffic jam. And we're talking in the car and he's a different character to me. He was really stressed. And I'm like, well, we can't really do anything about a big traffic jam. If there's been an accident, it's out of our control. And he's like, yeah, but we're meant to be on at 11 o'clock and we'll miss it and what'll happen. And then I'm like, I don't know, but we can't really do anything about it, you know. Two different characters. And anyway, we arrives at Stirling Uni and they're like, oh, you've missed your slots. Like, you can't do it. But anyway, as we got a bit further up the motorway, we realised that the accident was that a big lorry had tipped over with hundreds of chickens. So there was literally chickens running all over the motorway. And when we got up there, we explained to the instructors, listen, there's been a big accident on the motorway there, chickens everywhere, big delay. And they're like, right, what we'll do, we'll come out to your clubs so you can do your assessments there and we'll travel out to your club. So do it with the youth team. So anyway, when it come to that day, yeah, quite funny actually, because I went first, and as we walk on, I actually got the youth team together the night before, and I said, right, these are the drills we're going to do, just so you understand, when I say this, when I say that, you get in position, like, just give them a little heads up, basically. And anyway, when I walk out onto the pitch to do my assessment, all the first team players are in the stand. And they all, like, shouting down, oh, he's clueless, he hasn't got a clue, all laughing and all that. So it was a pressure situation, you know. And I went first, and mine went quite well, actually. Mine went really well. So when I'd finished it, I walked off and I said, Billy Reid was standing there, and I walked over. I said, Bill, what do you think? And he went, Wakey, he said, if you haven't passed that, there's something wrong. That was a good session and all that. And as I'm talking to Billy, Alex Neil's stressed again and he's screaming at me, will you help me get the balls? Will you help me with this? And he's really panicking and all that. And then he starts, and Billy's like, oh, I'm not sure about this. His areas are a bit tight and this isn't right and that's not right. And Billy was winding me up saying, Wakey, if you pass this course and he doesn't, he will never live it down. You know, he was captain, like Roy Keane type character in the club. And anyway, obviously he passed it, Alex. And you can see what he's gone on to do, you know, manage Norwich and Preston. Now he's done great. So, but that was the only badge I had, really. And then from there, when I played in Sweden, and then Graham offered me the job, and he knew I only had a B license, but I think he quite liked how I was as a person with the players. And I'm going on to do the rest of my coaching badges now, you know. So I think it's quite individual, really. It depends if a manager likes somebody and has trust in somebody. But I think the more it goes on now, you need certain ones to work in certain places.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, in England, well, and, you know, Ireland, Wales, Scotland, we've got the level one, level two, and then it goes up to the real sort of professional ones if you want to be somebody, basically, isn't it? But, I mean, I've got the teams that I coach, I've got people on level ones or even some volunteers, and they've got great ideas and great sort of beliefs and great people. So it's just a qualification at the end of the day, isn't it, really? In essence, I mean, obviously it's a lot more than that. You learn so much doing it, but it's who you are as a person, like you've just said,
I think,
really.
How can I say it? Like, I think the badges are really good to have. I think it's it can help you going forward, but like I think it's more about your people skills, and then you can have the pro license. I don't think it necessarily makes you a great coach. You could have a limited license and you could maybe be a better one or better people skills. I think they're good to have, but I don't think it determines whether you're good or bad, really, if I'm honest.
No. And it just, I mean, the main thing it does is open doors, isn't it? Because it's like, you know, it's on your CV for, it's sort of what's needed to get in.
Yeah,
and get totally a job, really, isn't it?
I think when you've worked with somebody like Graham and you see how special he is and how talented he is, I don't think Graham's learnt a lot of them things on a coaching badge, to be honest. I think it's more just him, how he is as a person, how he likes to do things differently and develop players differently and look to dominate games with maybe lesser players and play a brave style of football. I don't think coaching badges have necessarily given him that. I think that's probably just where he's more a bit of a genius himself, you know, and he's probably doing things what they advise you not to on coaching badges in a way, but that's what makes him so special.
Yeah. How far do you think he can go?
I actually said it. I have a good friend when we worked in Östersund, the goalkeeper coach, David Priest. He played for Sunderland, Aberdeen, different clubs, and he's the goalkeeper coach over there now. I actually said it to him a few months ago. I think he can go on to manage England, and he was like, "Do you really think that?" I said, "Yeah, I do." I said, "He's that good," and I think Graham can go as far as he wants, really.
Yeah.
With it.
Yeah, I think the setting has to be right for him, though, doesn't it? I mean, he's got the perfect setting at Brighton. He had the perfect setting at Swansea and with you guys in Sweden. So I think that's very important to him. You know, he wouldn't go to, let's say, Chelsea, where it takes some time to integrate what you want, and it's about a lot more than the results. The results will come.
Depends how you look at it. I mean, when he went into Swansea, they'd just been relegated. They had a lot of work to do in Swansea in terms of getting rid of high-profile players on big wages, and they introduced a lot of young players in, and it took them a little bit of time to get like established there. Like, I think the jobs Graham's took are big challenges. Even when you look at Brighton now in the Premier League, they probably have one of the lowest budgets in the Premier League, but you maybe get time to try and build it. And yeah, they've added young players in. You look at like Connolly up front, and they've got Ben White back from Leeds on loan and introducing him. And I mean, I think the actually really big challenge is what he's took on.
I think they are. And like you said, those players that he's brought in, Connolly, I really rate Connolly. And I think he promoted Alzate, didn't he? I think he's Australian / Colombian or something. I think I really rate him.
I think that's the thing with Graham, you know, and Billy as well plays a big part in this. I remember when I played for Billy in Scotland, we brought through James MacArthur, both Premier League players now. We had James MacArthur was playing in the first team when he was 16, and he went to Wigan, and then James MacArthur went to Wigan as well, and they both at Crystal Palace now, funnily enough. We had Brian Easton sold him to Burnley. Yeah. And, I mean, the players getting introduced in the first team squad from the youth team was unbelievable. And I think Billy has a real unique talent in just understanding when players can be introduced into it. It's like he just times it perfectly. You know, he'll wait now. He's not quite ready. And then all of a sudden he goes in and the young player does really well. And I would probably think Billy's played a big part in identifying which young players could are maybe ready for it and not, even in Swansea and Brighton. So, but I think when you look, even when you look at Swansea, you look at the likes of Dan James, he was out on loan at a club, wasn't really playing, they bring him back and they get the best out of him, they sell him. And then I think the guy, one of the defenders go to, was it Spurs? Was it Rodon? Is that, am I right?
Joe Rodon, yeah.
So there's another young player they've put into the team. And that's a constant through Graham's career. I mean, the way they move players in Sweden as well. Like, we had, we signed a player, Mudo Barrow from Varberg. He wasn't really playing. And they brought him there. And the special thing with Graham is he can build a team but find roles for players what really suit them. So he can literally build a team and put players in positions where the strengths and the weaknesses are not exposed. And I think this is one of his biggest skills in a way. So when we had Mudo Barrow, he was probably the best player in... He was playing in the second level for Östersund, but he was probably one of the best players in the full country in terms of 1v1. So they would let him cheat and he didn't have to track back, and then on the regain of possession, get the ball out of Mudo 1v1 as quick as we can. And he was just torturing people. It would be a red card, a penalty, he'd score, he'd assist. And this is where I started to think about football in a different way of I think when I'd played in England and Scotland, it was really rigid and 4-4-2 or 4-3-3 and everybody had the role. But then I started understanding how fluid football can be, where you can have players in little specialist roles who can really affect the outcomes of games. And that was my learning under Graham, really. And even when I watch Brighton every game now, I don't speak to Graham as much now. I know he's busy. He's got three kids there and he's ran off his feet with work. But I speak to the assistant, Billy, a couple of times a week, and he often picks my brains. What do you think of that? What do you think of this? And it's interesting to talk, you know. I think I've become one of Brighton's secret fans now, in a way, and I'm so happy to see they're doing well now. But there's no more interesting team for me to watch than to see what they're doing and how they're trying to do it and how we can compare to what they did in Östersund, you know.
Well, I was just going to say, I bet it's great for you to sit back and think, wow, you know, I see a bit of what we were doing all them years ago in Östersund, and he's doing the same with Brighton. Because I watched them against Liverpool and then I watched them against Spurs and I was absolutely blown away by what they were doing.
I was talking to Billy a while back. It was actually when they were at Swansea and they played Man City, and I think it was the FA Cup. And I said to Billy, I said, bloody hell, how are you gonna deal with this tomorrow against them? It was when Man City were dominating everything. And I remember Billy said something to me what stuck in my mind. He said, because I think a lot of Graham likes a lot of possession. He likes to dominate the game, control the game with possession. And Billy said something to me like, we might only have 30% possession, but when we get that 30%, we'll try and play the right way. And it sort of stuck in my mind, you know, even though you're going to get limited possession, you still try and play your game when you get that little bit against higher level players. And I think that sums Graham up in a nutshell, really. He has his ideology of football, but even if he plays against better players, he still tries to put his print on the game, with even if they only get a small amount. And I think that's really brave to do that, and shows a lot of courage, and that's what Graham's about, really.
Mm. And you can see just from the few Brighton games I've watched this season, you can see that all the players are 100% behind the project and what they're trying to achieve.
I think it's a testament to Graham when you think about, I mean, Brighton were an effective team under Chris Hughton and played a different way, but managed to stay in the league and were effective in what they did. But I think to go in and change a philosophy with a team like Brighton in such a short space of time, I can imagine it's a very difficult thing to do, but he's managed to do it. And again, it shows how good a coach and person he is. And to get players to buy into it, because you know, you're often in England, or the players aren't good enough to play that way. You can't do that with these type of players. You hear that often, you know. But he's really brave and he goes in and he tries to, he does it with players. And I think players enjoy it as well. You know, all players want to have the ball and play in a certain way, I think. And he manages to do that with players. So it's really impressive when you watch, really. And to be honest, I think Brighton should maybe be about another 8-9 points better off in the table. I've watched every game and, you know, they've dominated games and not managed to score or hit the post at the bar. But I think if there were maybe another 8-9 points better off, it'd be a more fair reflection of where they're at, really. That's my opinion, anyway.
Yeah, yeah. When you were in Sweden with him, how was he with the players? So was he sort of, did he lay it all out and this is what I'd like us to do, I want you to buy into it? Or did he ask the players what they thought and sort of say, you know, are there anything that you want to include in our philosophy and put it all together? Or was he very sort of set with what he wanted to do and you know, the players had to buy into that?
I think, to be honest, I think when he first started, the players needed a lot of guidance, so he probably, he told the players the way, really. And I think Graham's biggest skill is, he can design training sessions and functions on the training pitch where he doesn't tell players directly what he wants them to do, but he'll create functions where it develops the player to make the right decision more times than not, if you know what I mean. So he's not one to directly say, I want you to do this, I want you to do this, because young players will take that literally a lot of the time, and they'll try and do it all the time, even when it's not the right situation to do it. But what Graham does, he designs training sessions to, he puts people in situations like a number of times, so they actually learn themselves what they should do in that situation. And I think it's a real unique skill to be able to do that, if you understand what I mean. So,
I love that. Because so often people who are involved in football, and it can be from grassroots, and you've got your son in a team and you think the coach should be instructing the players more, and you know, why is he just standing there and letting them work stuff out for themselves? But that is it, that to me is just brilliant, because that just shows that is how you do it. You create the environment and almost sort of create some problems, and the players have got to solve it.
And I remember sometimes, like, he'd do sessions where they were really complicated and you could see players starting to stress, and he'd be like, for instance, you can do a drill where it's around the centre circle. It might be 18 players onto 3 in the middle chase, and you're keeping the ball on one touch. And it's a common drill in football. Everybody's probably done it. Mm-hmm. But then Graham would do it where there'd be a ball travelling around the circle on the outside as well. So you'd have to pass the ball around the outside. When's the ball coming on the outside? But then you need to be focused on where the ball's moving in the middle. So there's two balls going as well. And he's just constantly training the brain and find the solution. And it was like to be in and around it, it gave you a whole new perspective on football, you know. And I mean, when I look back, I'm really grateful and honoured to have been in that environment and being able to get some sort of inclination into how he worked and what he did. And he'd always find time to speak to me. I'd ask him questions about tactics and things, and he'd always help you. And he was fantastic with me, and I'm really grateful for him for that. And like I say, it was tough to sacrifice a few years playing, but when I look back, then I went on to a coaching career where I've managed a couple of teams and done the under-21s and head of recruitment in different roles. And it was worth the sacrifice of a few years playing to be able to get an understanding from him and prolong my career in football in a way.
I think you summed it up earlier. He's way ahead of his time, isn't he?
I mean, I think people are just... I don't think it's a case of what level Graham goes to. I just think the level of player he'll have, he'll just keep getting better and better and better. And I think when you look at what he's done in Brighton, you know, he's introduced a lot of young players in. Like I say, they should be eyed up the league. It's just been little bits of luck here and there. But when you look last week, they go and beat Liverpool and Tottenham. I just think he'll go from strength to strength. And eventually, I think he'll end up in a, no disrespect to Brighton, but he'll end up in a lot bigger club than Brighton. And I think it's up to Graham, really, where he goes and what he does. You know, he just keeps working away. And I think eventually it'll all come to him.
I think you're right. I think the world's his oyster, as they say. Whatever he wants to achieve, I think he can do it. I sort of feel naive a bit because I've got to be honest, when he came over from Sweden, I mean, everybody over here was sort of the same, like, oh, well, I know him as a player, but I mean, I don't know him as a coach, you know, and we sort of, you judge too quick, don't you? And I've got to sort of own up and say, looking at him from the outside, I just had no idea until you actually delve into how good he is.
I think that's a little bit like, sometimes I get the impression with English football, this is like, again, it's only my opinion, like, I think they'd rather be safe and go with somebody who's managed in there, even if they haven't done that well, than take a gamble and take someone from the outside who maybe can do really well. And I think Graham gives a lot of hope to other coaches in football. Yeah. The fact that he came from Sweden, it's not really a place where a lot of English clubs recruit from. And he's come across, and he's obviously a young British manager as well, who's done well. And I think it'll give hope to a lot of other British coaches as well, you know, like Ian Birchnell, who I worked with in Östersund after Graham. Really good manager, coach. And he's back in England now looking for an opportunity. Yep. And I'm quite sure he can go and do really well over in England as well. And hopefully, well, what Graham's doing will give hope to other good young managers, British-based managers, what are good as well, you know.
Well, I mean, we've seen it with the players going abroad, like Jadon Sancho going abroad, and hopefully it will spur some of these managers on who don't feel they get a chance over here to go over, apply their trade, you know, in different countries and then come back. And fair play to Swansea for actually
Swansea closely as well. I'm a big Middlesbrough fan. That's my team. You know, I watched Middlesbrough season ticket holder when I was a kid, and you know, I watch a lot of the Championship. And I think when you see what Swansea are doing this season, I think when Graham was in there,
yeah,
I think they probably did about 3 or 4 years work in one season there, in terms of, you know, it's like when a team gets relegated, they need to get big wage earners off the wage bill and bring young players in. It's the natural thing for teams relegated. And I think the guy in Swansea this year is doing a fantastic job, but I think Graham even laid a good foundation in there for somebody to go in when he left to carry that forward. And it's not taking away anything from the manager this season. He's doing a fantastic job. But I even think what they did in there in one season was a massive job, really, because you look, I know from following Middlesbrough, when teams get relegated, it can take 5 or 6 years to get it sorted out, to bring them back, you know. And I think even in there, they did a really impressive job, and always introducing young players and developing them and selling them. And it's just a constant trend from Östersund to where they are now.
And when going into you a bit, when you went to head of recruitment, what was that like for you earlier?
I was assistant manager with Ian, and then my son got seriously ill, like I was saying, and we were in Östersund when they discovered my son had cancer. And my partner at the time, my son's mum, I said, could we have him transferred? And they said, well, where do you want to go? So I said to my partner, I said, what's the best hospital in Denmark? And she said, Aarhus in Skyby Hospital in Aarhus. So I said, okay, we'd like to go there. And then my son's treatment took about 9-10 months. So I was away from the club at that point, and I was with my son supporting down there. And then when I came back, I explained to Ian, I said, I need to be away a bit more often now. Like, when I went back to work, I said, I need to get down there and be there a bit more often. And he said, okay, how about we change your role? And I said, okay, like, what are you thinking? And he said, do you want to become the head of recruitment? He said, you've been in Sweden longer than any of us. You probably know more players than any of us. So how would you take this role? Because the guy who was doing the head of recruitment at the time, David Webb, he left to go to Huddersfield. So I said, yeah, that sounds good. And he said, you can even relocate and be in Denmark more and travel from there and watch games, watch players, and just report back to us and come up here every now and then. And it suited me really well at the time. So I took it on, and then I was scouting players, sending reports back, watching games in Denmark, Norway, Sweden, everywhere what was accessible from where I was. And I really enjoyed it, actually.
And what sort of level were you watching and scouting, sort of right down to essentially grassroots in those countries?
Three, four leagues in each country, you know. So I was watching, like, I'd be in Denmark, I'd go and watch teams in the Superliga for young players coming through, or the level down where it's maybe lads what had been released by top clubs who were rebuilding their careers. And it was, I'd go and watch games anywhere, really. You know, you can always find a gem in a low level of football. So wherever I was based at that time, even if I went across to, say, Stockholm to watch 3-4 games, then if there was lower level games on, I'd go and watch them and just draft some reports up, maybe see something and something to keep an eye on going forward. So, yeah, it was different levels, really.
So what? So over here, obviously, well, I'm sort of being a bit, I can't think of the word, but traditionally over here, scouts look for, you know, 6-foot-tall, fast, strong, athletic. Oh, and can he play football? You know, what is that the same in Sweden? I mean, I know you've touched on it a bit before. It's very different out there. But what sort of players, what attributes were you looking for in the players that you were scouting?
When I worked in Östersund were Graham and Kyle McCauley, who done all the scouting for him. I mean, the job Kyle done, it's not been spoken probably as much as it should have been. It was an unbelievable job. I mean, he found the likes of Ken Seamer, Saman Godos. Ken's in Watford now. Saman's in Brentford. Played from today when they beat Middlesbrough 4-1. So wow. I'm not happy about that, but he did. And then you had Moodoo Barrow, who they sold for big money. Kyle found him. So, I mean, Yeah, the job Kyle done was unbelievable.
Yeah, I remember him.
And I often spoke to Kyle a lot and used to say to him, what do you look for? And I think a key thing that what he did was they'd look for a player with an attribute above the level what they were working in. So when you think of Mudu Barrow, Mudu's a difficult one to talk about because he was above the level in so many ways. But say with someone like David Akam, who we signed from the Nike Academy, he was so fast, so quick, and had decent technical ability. And then Graham would just develop the player. So they had an attribute what was above the level, and then they would polish up all the other sides of it. And within maybe one and a half seasons, teams would be looking to buy him and things like that. So it was a little bit different for me because as Graham was recruiting, going through the levels, they were probably getting players who could play the level above or whatever. But when I started it, we were in Allsvenskan then, and it's trying to find a player what can go straight in and hit the ground running at that level. So I think it's a little bit more difficult, but it was real interesting learning curve speaking to Kyle, like how he'd look for, like if you look at Ken Seema, physically he's a Premier League player, you know, pace and power. And then I think they just developed him tactically, you know, Ken out of possession, you're looking to do this, in possession, can you do this? And they're just constantly developing players and making them better, but they make people better people as well. I mean, one thing I can say about Graham is how intelligent and how fantastic he is. He leads by example the way he conducts himself as a person every day, you know, and he's immaculate in everything he does. So I think that's how he leads to his players, the way he lives his life, the way he is as a family man and everything else. And it's just like you're just around a great person who I think people just want to go and do well for him as a natural thing, how he is, you know.
Well, and that's the best place to start, isn't it? You know, if you like the person that's sort of got all these great ideas and beliefs, you're gonna buy into it because of the person they are, and that's you know, it's a massive belief of mine as well. It's you can't just keep telling people what
and
to
that's
do.
Exactly,
you've got to
what he did. He
create
a culture,
haven't you?
Graham's big on like a no blame culture, so Graham would get really frustrated if you got players complaining to other players. He didn't accept that at all. And I think he would be like, he'd ask players, is any of us perfect here? Who's perfect? Have you ever made a mistake on a football pitch? Yeah. Okay. Who are you to complain to anybody else type thing? So he creates this environment where players respect each other. If someone makes a mistake, you just get back in position and deal with it from there. And I also think when Graham would often talk about his own career, and Graham played at a high level, and I don't know whether he thought he maybe could have achieved more, but I think his career was quite up and down. So I think he understands a lot of the emotional side of football and the pressures what it brings to players as well. So he can really relate to him and speak to him in a positive way regarding that aspect as well.
So if a, let's say, attacking midfielder wasn't being the quickest at getting back or trying to press, let's say, how, instead of the blame culture, how would Graham like his team to sort of, you know, let's say the captain to sort of talk to that attacking midfielder about his roles and what
he
should be doing?
Quickly identify physical capacities and tactical capacities, and then it structure the team around putting that attacker midfielder in a place where maybe he doesn't have to do that much running, or like, and then obviously if he sees somebody just being lazy, he'd address that himself. He'd maybe speak to the player and what, and then it comes down to judgment. But it's more a case of he could structure a team around, like, if an attacker midfielder physically couldn't track back and do this. Then he'd structure the team around that. And then, obviously, if the player was just being completely lazy, then he'd probably put you on the bench like most managers would. But it's more... Yeah, go on.
But would he... So you say he'd address it and talk to the player. Would he do that in front of the team, or would he do it in private?
I mean, I've seen him criticise players in a... He's criticised me a couple of times if he didn't think I was doing what I should have done. And that's fair enough, you know. But it was always done in the right way. And I think he has a lot of small chats with players one-on-one as well. Graham, obviously, I'm going back a few years now who I was in Östersund, so he's probably developed a lot since then, and he could be working in a different way now, but I can only speak of when I worked under him. He'd often have a lot of chats with players, pull them in, and it wasn't just football. He'd be asking you how you're doing, how's the family, how's everything with this as well. He really cares, you know, about the players playing for him. And then...
Just to jump in there, you know, it's so much like Sir Alex Ferguson, because you watch the documentaries on Sir Alex, and I can't remember which player it was. Might have been Rio Ferdinand. He said he knew every player's parents and their grandparents. And when they came to games, you know, he'd go up and introduce himself, and they'd go home and say, how on earth did he know my name? You know, and he just knew everything about every player, not necessarily on a football.
No, and it's interesting. Even when I played for Hamilton in Scotland, I remember one Sunday, I went to watch the under-19s play, and this is when Billy Reid was manager there, and I was talking to Billy, and I said, "Are you looking for anything in particular?" And he's like, "No." He said, "Every Sunday I come and watch." And he'd literally be at the stadium from 10 o'clock in the morning till 8 o'clock at night. He'd watch the under-10s, under-11s, right the way up to the under-19s. He knew every parent, and you'd see him walk around the parents, hello. And that's the dedication it takes, you know. And obviously Billy's Graham's assistant in there, but just like, it's impressive to see that. I've played for clubs where the manager can't get out the door quick enough, you know. He never watched the reserves, never watched the youth team, but it's just a different level of dedication, I suppose.
Yeah. No, it really is. Well, it's been amazing to talk to you. It honestly has. It's been so good. It's just a great insight to Graham, but also you and the coaches and the people that were around you.
Just want to say a massive thank you to everyone who's followed us on social media. It's unbelievable. We're growing very quickly. Please get involved. Find us on Twitter. We do have a Facebook page. Retweet anything that you find good. It's much appreciated.